At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Neil, how's it going this week, man? I actually just saw you a few days ago, but let me know how things have been since then.
Yeah, I'm doing okay. I picked up a little bit of a cold or something on the flight home.
Damn.
Which was unfortunate, and I was seated one row behind the worst Vikings fan of all time, apart from Alex Brinson. just this like grossly obese woman, like smokers, wheezing, the classic Karen haircut. Mm-hmm. This can't be a real person. And she just spent the whole flight talking to the person across the aisle from her who she didn't know. And this woman, like the other woman was like trying to like, okay, I'm going to read my book now.
Like, oh, no.
But she just like, it was just a constant shitting. Like, I hate going into Wisconsin. It's so disgusting in Wisconsin. She's like, yeah, I'm a Vikings fan, so I can't even stand the thought of Wisconsin. This isn't even worth engaging.
Jesus, yeah, you met the final boss of boomers, dude.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds horrible, but hey, you know, you made it to Minneapolis. You got a good steak out of the deal. You know, had a good time with me and the buds. So hopefully it was all worth it.
Yeah, I mean, so for listener context and for Gid, Sam celebrated his bachelor party this weekend. I think he had a good time. I'm not sure he had a good time, but I think
No. Of course, I had a good time. What makes you not sure?
Well, when I don't think that you knew that Alex Princeton and I were going to show up because I think we were trying to trick you.
I had no idea.
So when Xander acted as the distraction and we snuck up on you and we told you that it was your bachelor party, I believe your first words were, "No, it isn't." And I saw the fight or flight response in your eyes, like you were like you're trying to think, like, how do I make it out of this park and back home without Xander driving me? How do I escape?
We were beset on one side by a lake. I almost jumped in like a fish and just started swimming away from you guys. It was a pleasant surprise. Actually, what I will say before. We'll get to getting here in a second. What I said to Grace that was really nice about it was usually I feel like I am the friend wrangler, like the person that is trying to get everybody to play a game or everybody to hang out or everybody to come to Muscatine to play World of Warcraft or whatever, right? So it was really, really nice to be
wrangled.
It was nice to be wrangled. It was nice to be the victim. of a organization and to be on the receiving end of it. And everybody had, like, you know, we all love Xander, but Xander isn't sometimes, like, he's very elusive or, like, you know, is like hard to pin down or hard to get like answers from or hard to get like a commitment on. And just everybody like had everything planned out so well, you know, like that was the surprising thing to me. Not that it was nice to not for everything to have gone very well and to not have been in on the planning. And I didn't have to worry about, you know, parking or driving or paying for dinner or anything like that. So yeah, it was great. What I said at dinner was 100% truthful, which is that like there's very few things I would rather be doing than hanging out with my friends and eating, you know, a $90 steak. Anyway, you guys already heard from him. Gideon, how's it going this week?
Pretty good. Not doing too much. Been playing a little bit more Hollow Knight. I think I'm 3 or 4 hours in. Let's see. I watched a couple movies. Oh, dude. Corpse Bride. I rewatched that for the first time since maybe like on DVD in 2007. Recently got a 4K, new 4K transfer. So I had pre-ordered the 4K Blu-ray and everything. And that was like, holy fucking shit. That was so gorgeous to look at. So impressive. It was OLED city to the max, like just super beautiful with all the animation and the shadows and everything. It just like, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure I'll like it. You know, I like Gothic stuff, but I hadn't seen it, you know, forever. And I was kind of more getting it for Alyssa because I knew she liked it. And then it just like totally won me over and I had such an excellent time. And then I watched this documentary from 1996 called Dreamland, which had like Bob Lazar. It's all about like Area 51. Right. And Alyssa found it like randomly at a thrift store, so that was a lot of fun. We just finished Alien Earth right before this, and that was really good. Ending kind of leaves you wanting more. Hopefully we get season two, which I think is very likely. And I saw that new Him movie, which a lot of people are shitting on, but I thought it was fine. You know, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was like super amazing. I wish there was more X-ray scenes, which those look like really, really cool, but they last like less than 10 seconds in total, it felt like. And then obviously watched The Wrestler, and yeah. I gotta share this story real quick about work. I mentioned it briefly to Neil, but so for context, I work at a bank, so it's somewhat public, right? Place, and these dudes came in today and they had like acoustic guitars and they straight up were playing like songs in the bank and like clapping and stuff like it was a shindig. So I got a little recording to play and I was like, do I work at a bank or the goddamn circus? Like, what the fuck is happening right now? So it's less than a minute, but I'm just going to play. But they played two songs, dude. And they were saying, like, what did they say? They were, like, traveling to Branson, Missouri, and they were trying to get, like, tips for, like, gas money in a hotel. I was like, get the fuck out of here, dude. Like, so let me just play a little bit real quick.
All right.
Can you hear this?
No.
How about that?
Still no.
Oh shit. Well, I'll just play it a different time.
I'll tell you what. Tell me what it's like, and I'll just send me the audio, and I'll clip it into the recording.
Yeah, they're just like singing about being late for work or something, and clapping and freaking, and I'm like, oh my fucking god, like what is.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Happening right now. And I'm like, really trying to lock in is like works. I'm just trying to like focus on what I'm doing, not mess anything up. And I was just like, oh my god, these people need to leave. And I asked like a coworker about it. I was like, what is happening? What is going on? They're like, oh, they're just trying to get some money. I was like, yeah, me too. Like, what the fuck? So I had to share that. I was like, you know, I always get so triggered with people in the theater, and I was like, it's like they're invading my workspace now, but they have a guitar. Or multiple.
All right. Well, Mumford and Sons showed up at your bank and just ruined your day. It sounds rough, dude.
I was so annoyed.
You know, all it reminds me of is going out to a party when I was at college at UNI. That was some like hipster kid in one of my classes invited me to, and these kids were too hipster even for me at the time. I was like, "You guys are fucking dorks." Like. I got like caught in between a conversation where this guy was totally bullshitting, and he was like, oh yeah, man. And then I hitchhiked down to Arizona. I was selling rebel flags out of a truck. I was like, you didn't do any of that shit. Like, I think I've seen you working at the Verizon store like near campus. I know you didn't do that shit, you bullshit or whatever. Anyway, yeah. Well, I hope those guys made it to Missouri or whatever the hell is they were trying to
who
do.
Who knows, dude? Yeah.
You've been playing.
In Gideon's case, he hopes that they made it to Missouri.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or a ditch somewhere, you know.
Yeah. God. Okay, and you've been playing Fortnite? You're gonna get the Daft Punk collaboration?
Yeah, I'm really hyped. They haven't like announced pricing or like if we're gonna get emotes or whatever. But what I'm most excited for is there's gonna be a Daft Punk like event, right? But it's also gonna be like an experience. With like some of their music and stuff, but it's cool because it's going to be a permanent addition, so I don't have any like FOMO with that, so that would be really nice. You can just always check it out. And it's like I forget if it was you or somebody else they asked me, is like, oh well, like what collabs or what things would you want them to add to the game, and I'm like, at this point, like I don't really know, but it's like they know what I want, you know, because then mm-hmm. they announced Daft Punk, and before that right. they announced Gorillaz, and I'm like, damn, this right. is awesome.
So, yeah, somebody's got your number over there, man.
Dude, for real. They probably, when I started playing, like, the PS5 controller, like, pricked my finger, and they took my DNA, and mm-hmm. they know exactly what I like. Yeah.
And, okay, and Fortnite's the only thing you've been playing?
Well, other than that, just a little bit of Hollow Knight. Okay. And a little more Death Stranding, but not too much. I need to get back to it.
Okay.
Oh, one last thing I wanted to mention, dude, super excited. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the Muscatine Theater, they're going to do theatrical re-releases of the OG Spider-Man trilogy, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, sick, dude.
And I'm going to at least try and see 1 and 2. I don't know if I really care enough to see 3, but I also haven't really seen any of those movies in a long ass time, definitely more than 10 years. So at least 1 and 2 for sure, because I've been meaning to rewatch them anyways. So really excited to do that.
So Gid, I actually saw Spider-Man 1 in the Muscatine Mall theater.
Nice.
In 2002, whenever it 2003, whenever it came out. Mm-hmm. If you remember that theater, how your feet always stuck to the floor.
Oh yeah.
And there was like one tiny concrete room with a movie projector screen in it. I saw it with Nick Daly. We sat in a different, like my parents took me and Nick Daly. We sat in a different section, and I shit you not, the projectionist stopped the movie because he had to go to the bathroom and he hadn't seen it yet.
Bruh, what?
I promise you this happened.
Oh my god. That's like, so annoying.
He just hit pause. He is like, I'll be back in, you know, a few minutes.
Was he doing a number one or a number two?
It must have been a number two because it was like 10. He was gone for like 10 minutes today. And me and Nick and everybody in there, we were like, Spider-Man, Spider-Man, like chanting. And then he turns it back on and we were all like, yeah.
That's so funny. I had a similar thing happen, but you know, they do the digital projectors and like hard drives and shit now, I'm sure. Yeah. But when I saw John Wick 3 at the Muscatine Theater, it like just straight up froze, and like everyone in the theater like didn't know what to do. I was like, I'll go tell them it's broken, I guess. So I told everybody. I went out and they looked at me like they didn't know what to do at all. I was like, I don't know. You are the people that work here. And then like I was like super hungry and I just had like popcorn that day, and it's like I think it's almost 3 hours long, and then they rewound mm-hmm. it like 30 more minutes prior to when it froze, and I was like, oh god, I'm gonna get like sick. I've only eaten popcorn, like mm-hmm. I'm dying over here. But yeah, anyways,
well man, the only other really notable experience I ever had in that theater was I went to see Zero Dark 30, and halfway through I ran to the bathroom and threw up all over the place because I had eaten Maid right like right before going to the movie theater.
Was it made wrong?
Yeah, this shit was made wrong. So yeah, I went and blew chunk, and then I finished the movie. I was like, I'm not leaving. This shit's awesome. Well, it almost got to the part where they were actually going to go kill Osama bin Laden. I was like, I'm not missing this. I sat through 2 hours of Jessica Chastain, you know, talking. You know, I'm gonna watch. You know, I'm gonna watch the finale here. So anyway, we are here today to talk about the. Oh, I feel like such a pretentious movie podcast. We get to talk about a Darren Aronofsky film. 2008's The Wrestler. So Neil brought this to the movie, or brought this to the podcast. Mm-hmm. Neil, do you want to tell me about why you brought The Wrestler, your history with the movie, and then more broadly, your history with Darren Aronofsky?
Okay, so I watched this at my friend Ethan's house sometime during high school, so a couple years after it came out. Ethan was my big film buff friend. Like, he, a lot of the things that I've brought here were probably things that he showed me, or like he's kind of foundational as far as like my good movie tastes. Right.
Good movie taste, Neil. What are you talking about? Didn't you give Speed Racer a 1?
Well, yeah. Like I said, good movie. But you know, like, you know, I, you know, if left to my own devices, I like to laugh at B movies, and like shitty movies. So like, when it comes to like, you know, more like critically acclaimed directors and stuff, that comes from Ethan. But I looking through Darren Aronofsky's filmography, at least as a director, I think this is the only one I've seen. I keep meaning to watch The Whale. Requiem for a Dream is on my list. And if we ever do Black Swan, I'll talk about how I've seen Black Swan without seeing Black Swan. But this is my only toe dip into Darren Aronofsky. But I remember watching it, you know, probably around like 2010. And it's always just kind of stuck with me in the back of my head. I honestly remember crying the first time I watched this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not a movie where, you know, I add specific scenes to my YouTube playlist, because it's not a feel good movie by any stretch of the imagination. You know, but, you know, I think it's worth watching. It's worth rewatching, but you have to be in a particular mood to rewatch it, I think.
See, I totally understand what you mean on the feel-good movie stuff, or it not being a feel-good movie. But I almost have the opposite reaction to it. We'll get into that. Gideon, what's your had you seen this before? And then what's your history with Darren Aronofsky?
Yeah, never seen this before. Never heard of it. Didn't watch the trailer. Went in totally blind. Literally never heard anything about this movie. As far as Darren Aronofsky goes, I don't think I've seen any of his movies besides this one either. I've been meaning to some point get to Requiem for a Dream, but I heard that's a pretty hard watch. I remember reading like the synopsis in high school on Wikipedia, and that kind of scarred me or like scared me away from wanting to watch it. But I feel like now I'd be fine. I've been curious about The Fountain and Black Swan. I definitely want to watch The Whale at some point. And he just came out with Caught Stealing, which looks pretty good too. I guess this is also my first one of his that I've seen.
Okay, and let's see here. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way as you guys. I have not seen any other Darren Aronofsky movie. I've actively avoided seeing Mother because I think it would like actually make me angry.
Why do you
I
say
haven't
that?
Seen just because like I vaguely know that it's like this really heavy-handed biblical allegory, and it just seems like the kind of movie that would be like the ultimate sniffing his own farts kind of thing, and I just don't care. That's all I know about it, is that it's like a giant Genesis allegory, and I don't like It kind of strikes me the same way as like Beau's Afraid, where it's just like a really, really what's the, like, I don't want to say an ego project, but a movie that, like, you know, they got away with making because of that they're a big name director, and it isn't actually like a movie that anybody's supposed to enjoy. I don't know. Anyway, maybe I'll have to give it a shot sometime. But the way it was described to me in college by like people who I thought had really bad opinions about movies made me not want to watch it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I, of course, like, I've heard about Requiem for a Dream like being somewhat infamous, and I knew about Black Swan, but I haven't seen any of this stuff. I haven't seen The Whale because it would just remind me too much of me going to White Castle on the weekends. I had only tangentially heard of The Wrestler because I remember the Academy Awards back in 2008 when this movie was nominated and it winning at least for something. I know Mickey Rourke didn't win for his performance here, but I think it was at least nominated for a whole lot of stuff. And I kind of colloquially knew that everybody really likes this movie. But I had not seen it. I also somehow knew that Marissa Tomei gets naked. But I didn't really understand the context of that before we started watching the movie. So this was, I think we all kind of went in. Well, Gideon and I went in relatively blind. And Neil, you saw it how many years ago? Probably 15 years ago?
Yeah, 15 years ago, let's say.
Okay.
Nice.
So yeah, kind of a somewhat fresh one for all of us. So let's get our 10,000 foot. I'm already going, so I'll kind of give my 10,000 foot thoughts. I obviously I really, really liked it. I can't imagine too many people not really, really liking The Wrestler. It was one of those movies where while it was going, I was like, please don't stop. Please just like just keep going. I want to see where this goes. And it isn't particularly strong from a story beat to story beat. Like, you know where it's going, you know where the movie is going to end ultimately, like you know, within the first 20 to 30 minutes, but you don't care because Mickey Rourke's performance is so good, and his performance is absolutely towering. I think Marissa Tomei is also really good in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's slightly brought down, even though she isn't in it that much. I think his daughter's performance is pretty bad. In my opinion, like, I did not like that actress in this. Darren Aronofsky is not a subtle filmmaker, and they really beat it into your head that this guy is like stuck in the 80s. He's got his Nintendo and he's got his like long bleach blonde hair and his fake tan and everything, but you just can't help but love this guy. I was laughing so hard when he started to really like his deli job. Yeah, it was just like the funniest scene of the whole thing. And like I told you guys earlier, when there's something to be said about a movie that builds to a satisfying conclusion. And when he tells Marissa Tomei at the end, he's like, out there, I never get hurt. This is what I'm meant to do. And then he walks out to Sweet Child of Mine and the American flag drops down behind him. I was like, oh my God, give this movie a 6. I was like so into the end of this movie. I was like, you know, I felt like my dad always tells the story of being a kid in Muscatine when Rocky came out at the theater and people in the theater, Rocky, Rocky, like cheering along with the movie. That's how I felt at the end of The Wrestler. So I got like really, really into it. Just loved it. So how about you, Gid, and then we'll go over to Neil.
Yeah, mostly similarly. I mean, I was pretty captivated from it almost from the get-go. I love, you know, people, they throw around the term like, oh, it's a raw and real movie. This like really felt like that to me.
Yeah.
Like a definition of that. I think that being shot on 16mm really helped with that, and it felt very documentary-esque in that way. And I agree with what you said about like, just, you know, I didn't really want it to end and just could keep endlessly watching. I didn't really mind his daughter's performance. I thought she was pretty good. And I mean, Mickey Rourke was absolutely incredible. Just like totally show-stopping stuff. And just the whole movie to me was very like powerful, I felt like. And there's a lot of little details I noticed. You know, he's called the Ram, right? And he's driving a Dodge Ram. I thought that was funny. And he has a tattoo on one of his fingers that I'm pretty sure is Job from like the Bible. So I thought that was cool. Just kind of the parallels between the story of Job and him.
What are the parallels between the story of Job and him?
Well, from what I remember, isn't Job, he just like suffered a lot and had a lot of hardship and stuff like that throughout his life, but always kind of kept his faith and or like believed in God or that things are going to be okay or something like that. But with him, I just think of it's like, you know, he has it tattooed on his fingers and his whole way he makes his living is like through this like showmanship of violence and physical activity and performance and stuff like that. And almost like having like the wrestling ring be his like temple or something, his safe place. Like he says, like you said at the end where he's like, you know, they can't hurt me in here, but out there is where I get hurt, like, you know, in the real world, which is also so incredible. And I love a good needle drop. And holy shit, the needle drop at the end when they play The Wrestler by Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, which yeah.
Never heard. I was like, oh my God, this is going to fucking... I was like, if I was... Go ahead, Neil.
I was going to say, I believe that Mickey Rourke and Bruce Springsteen are friends, and Bruce wrote that song for the movie.
Oh, okay, nice. I didn't know that. I wasn't sure because it looked like the album I was looking at after the fact, it looked like it came out. Around the same time.
It also lines up well because Bruce Springsteen is from New Jersey.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
I loved also like the environments and how it was shot was very like dilapidated and run down, which mirrored like his own state of where his life was at. And I was like, you know, Neil had mentioned this made him cry, and I was like, yeah, if I was more depressed than I usually am and maybe had a couple drinks in me, I probably would have been like weeping. Like, and last quick thing I'll say, I noticed I was reading up on the trivia on IMDb, and Roddy Piper, who's like, I think he's a Hall of Famer from WWF. I know him from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, plays a character called the Maniac. And I guarantee, like, I think his first appearance was like a year or two after this movie came out. And they're like, oh, you got kids, the Maniac? And he's like, nah, not anymore. Like, I was like, his character is so based on this movie. But I read in the trivia, like, this movie, like, moved him so much. He broke down into tears, like, after he watched it. And I think he did, like, a special feature extra on the Blu-ray. But yeah, so that's a long way of saying I really, really enjoyed this movie on lots of different levels.
Yeah, it is a very powerful, like you said, that's a good word for it. It's a powerful movie. What was the scene that made you guys emotional? For me, it was like when he is dancing with his daughter in like the bombed out ruins of Atlantic City, like the boardwalk.
That's a way to describe it. Yeah. For me, I think the two that sort of resonate with me are maybe like a little bit of context for our listeners who haven't seen this. This is about an aging pro wrestler. Like, he's well past his prime. He was big in the 80s. And it's set in like modern day, so 2008. He's well past his prime, but he's still wrestling and like making ends meet by working part time at a grocery store. And during like this god awful looking match or right after a match that's like held in like a high school gym, he has a heart attack. And because he has been like so focused on wrestling his whole life, he doesn't have like anybody to really take care of him. So after he gets released from the hospital, he has to take a taxi back to the high school parking lot where his beat up van is. And it's like a 45 second shot, like aerial shot of him just like limping from where the cab dropped him off the 20 feet to his van. Just like a totally like physically broken guy.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Gid? What was the scene that really got you?
I mean, there was quite a few. Almost anything with his dickhead manager. I was like, please let there be a scene where he grabs a window and smashes it over his head, you know? But unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
Yeah, what's that comedian's name? Todd Barry, isn't that it?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't familiar. His face looked familiar, but I couldn't name him.
Yeah, Todd Barry.
This one, it kind of hit me, and then hit me again from my own experience, where like he invites the kid over to play Nintendo, and they're playing that fake wrestling game, which I heard in trivia, it's actually like it was built for this movie, and it's fully playable, but it's not a real game. Or I guess it is, since I made it fully playable. But when the kid is talking about Call of Duty 4, I was like, oh yeah, nice Call of Duty 4 shout out. And he like, you could tell he like didn't really know what it was at first, and it's like, you know, just like with how he's past his prime with the wrestling stuff, it's like he doesn't even know like what this hot new game is. But then even for me, I'm like, oh my god, I'm like, people don't know like what a huge moment Call of Duty 4 was. Like, I just remember watching like video documentaries of like, oh, this in the campaign when this helicopter crashes, like we spent 2 weeks just on this cinematic, like. And I'm like, god damn, I'm getting old just like the wrestler. This is fucking depressing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still young, but god damn, that hit me like a truck.
Yeah, dude. I was joking with you guys that they're gonna make a movie called The Bass Player, where they pull, you know, I get off stage, I'm like 60, I'm like eating cheeseburgers and drinking beers and played at a gig, and I fucking fall off the stage and I throw up and have a heart attack, and they're like, no, you gotta slow down, Sam. You're hitting life too hard. No, it'll be all right, I'm sure. Bob Dylan's fine. I'll be all right. All right, Jesus, what do we want to talk about with this movie? Okay. I actually, earlier, Neil, you said this, like, this movie is a downer, and I totally get where you're coming from. And there is something very, like, the cinematography in this movie reminds me a lot of True Detective, in that it's, like, the most gritty, realistic, down to like it, this movie looks like the America that I know, you know, it looks like the world of, you know, maybe not as dilapidated, but it looks like the world of the places that I have lived, and it does not look like the fictional world that is like portrayed in most movies. You know, you could confuse a lot of this shit for like Southend Muscatine or like some of the bad parts of Davenport or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand when people say that it's a downer, but I felt like so inspired by the end of this movie. Mm. Like the idea that he's going to go out there and just like, this is what I do, and this is what I was born to do, and I'm putting my fucking life on the line for you people out there. Like I'm, you know, nailing myself to the cross because this is like the only thing I know how to do. And it's like his sacrifice is somewhat beautiful. And I don't know, I found that very, I don't know, I found it like to be a very positive, like not in a Rocky Balboa kind of way, but in more of a freeing kind of way. I came away from this movie, and I know that, like, you know, it cuts before he like has a heart attack at the end of the movie, and you're kind of supposed to, I think you're supposed to assume like, yeah, he probably had a heart attack and fucking died in the ring. But even if that's the case, that's like a badass way to go. Like, he went out on his own terms. He didn't go out with the hairnet at the deli counter getting bitched at by that old lady who said he didn't have enough potato salad in the jar, who I wanted to slap in the head.
Yeah. Hit her with the window too, please, and the barbed wire.
How do you guys feel? Feel good? Feel not good?
In terms of like it being depressing and like a downer, mm-hmm. or like inspired? I don't know. I mean, it's not like it's like bleak and downtrodden in a way that I really, really love. In the almost like, this might sound cheesy or whatever, but like kind of like how I really, really like like Midwest emo and stuff like that, where it's like, that was honestly something I was kind of missing when I had moved to Colorado. It's like, oh my God, I never thought I'd miss these dilapidated ass streets and like dreary weather and stuff like this. But there's something kind of homey to it. And just like, you know, you see the American flag a lot, and it's like, he is, you know, even though he's struggling, he's still fighting for his dream to be this professional wrestler. And he loves like the fans that love him, and they, that is really, really touching. And how he will do stuff where he'll, you know, he'll hide the blade in his wrist wrap so he can cut himself. And I think they call it like giving color or something like that, where he's bleeding out of his forehead, which I read he did that for real too in the movie, which is nuts. And just even like how his relationship with, is it Marissa Tomei? Is that right?
Yeah. Put some respect on her name, Gideon.
I just couldn't remember exactly, but they, how they are both performers and they both have to use their body for their work, and it kind of breaks them both down in different ways. And when they have that like fight at the bar and he's like, oh, I want to dance, and he like throws the money, I was like, I was feeling the hurt for both of those characters. And I was just like what I love about it is like, I love seeing these movies where it's like a slice of life and it's like these real people and these real characters that deal with this shit. And, you know, I remember I was talking to somebody once and I was explaining why I really like sad music more than happy music. And I was like, it's like happy music is a product that you can listen to and put on in the supermarket when you're shopping. But sad music is like, this is real and this happened to me, and and stuff like that, which I appreciate way more. And obviously there can be happy music like that too, but yeah. And just like, I feel like the way it was shot and some of the locations really enhanced it. Like, I think my favorite shot of the movie was when he's at the payphone telling everybody he retired, and the payphone is like graffitied, and the building behind him's like boarded up and graffitied, and it's just, yeah, it's like dour and just like gray, and this like dying America, you know, that, but it's like he's still fighting for his American dream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a totally valid interpretation. I had a lot of thoughts of like the similarly like the patriotic imagery and things like that in the movie, you know, like people consider, well, I should say some people consider the 80s to be like such a boom time, such a like a time of strength in American history. And then like obviously the late 2000s, it's like we're at the tail end of like the Bush era with all the Middle Eastern shit, and then like the financial crisis in 2008. So I feel like, yeah, it was a timely movie too, where it seems like people, you know, wanted to have that like pick me up, like resilient kind of movie. And you know, like, I, not to keep going back to the Rocky comparison, but I think that's a lot of like what people loved about Rocky is it came out in 76 or 77 when there was a gas crisis and Iran had a bunch of American hostages they weren't letting go of, and things were just like, inflation was crazy, and you know, so they kind of came out at similar times in American history, and I think they stick with people for that reason. I mean, it was just the right movie at the right time, the right performance. I mean, yeah, I think there's something to be said about the like the patriotic element of it too. Neil, feel good movie, feel bad movie. Tell me why this movie makes you feel bad.
So I compare this movie to Leaving Las Vegas. This is a,
yeah, I was thinking that too.
Mm-hmm.
This movie's one long suicide, really. Mickey Rourke's character, like, you know, because of his like steroid use to stay fit in the professional wrestling scene, his heart's giving out, and you know that, you know, he's kind of trapped. I understand where you're coming from, Sam, with like the, you know, there's a lot of like pump up scenes, but to me those are still sad because, you know, like he never made it big enough, or like he didn't capitalize on his fame at the time to like retire comfortably. He doesn't have a family to fall back on. Part of the plot is him trying to reconnect with his daughter and failing. And so, yeah, you know, he's living in a trailer that he can't make rent on. So like the landlord like keeps locking his doors. You know, his only like real connection is Marissa Tomei, a stripper who is like, you know, trying to balance like her work obligations, and like, you know, he can't date customers. And you know, like Gideon said, she's in a similar situation. She's like, I think she says she's like 46 and has a 9-year-old son, and she's still stripping. You know, like that's not a sustainable lifestyle either. And this comes to like the second, what I would call sad shot, is at the very end he's getting his reunion match against his like 80s heel, the Ayatollah. And like you said, Sam, it's topical. Like the guy comes out waving an Iraqi flag, you know, it's a contrast with it's a contrast against Randy the Ram. But Marissa Tomei shows up and she's like, look, I'm here. I'm really here, after she's like rejected him a number of times. And he goes out there and he starts having a heart attack in the ring, and he's like playing it off. But then you know, I think it's kind of like what's supposed to be his last chance to, you know, leave that world behind, go back to work in the deli. But, you know, maybe he lives, maybe he gets something like a happily ever after with Marissa, but she's already gone. She's not standing where he left her. And so, yeah, like you can talk about like, you know, he dies in the ring, he goes out on his own terms, whether or not he has a heart attack that finishes him there, or be, you know, like, you know, he's not going to get like, I think narratively, he doesn't get a second chance at a relationship with her or reconnecting with his daughter, or third chance in that case. Like if he doesn't die there, he's going to die the next time, and then probably in like a shittier venue. So I just don't see it as a win. I think that kind of like harkens to like, you know, there's like the meme of like the masculine urge to go do this really incredibly stupid thing.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's like, you know, would you drop your life to travel back 300 years in time and get on a old timey wooden sailing ship and try and circumnavigate the Earth for the first time? Oh, maybe. Oh, it's, or you know, like, you know that's me. But you know, other people all have their own version of that. And in this case, it's wrestling. But I think that there's, you know, I think there is that draw to like, you know, just drop all your responsibilities. Don't, you know, like, you know, forego like the traditional lifestyle and go off and do this thing that you're passionate about, even if it's not going to make you conventionally successful.
You mean like playing guitar in a bank?
I don't want to give them that much credit.
Yeah. I think the brilliance is that, I think there's some brilliance in that it can be interpreted either way. Like I hear what you're saying. I completely understand your point and about Marissa Tomei leaving, but there's like, I don't know. There's still a part of me that's very much like, well, on a long enough timeline, we're all just, you know, we're all just worm food anyway. So why not go out like a badass, like walking in behind the American flag and doing what you love and just, you know, like, yeah, you're right. He's like, he already lost. In my mind, I'm like, okay, well, he's going to make lemonade and, you know, go out like, you know, go out a hero, which I think I don't know. There's just something so incredibly positive about that.
No, like, I just want to like counterpoint. It's just like in some ways, like the best result is that he dies in the ring there. I just want to harken back to that, to an earlier scene where he goes to like an autograph signing. And there's like seven or eight guys, and he's the guy that's in the best shape of all of them.
Yeah.
you know, like, you know, if he has a heart attack and he's debilitated, that's him.
What did you guys think of the hardcore match scene with the guy with the staple gun?
Jesus Christ.
One of the most violent scenes I've ever seen in a movie. I mean, wouldn't you guys say it's up there?
I've probably seen worse stuff, but I can't.
I mean, yeah, I've seen worse because we've all seen Bone Tomahawk, but I mean, in a more mainstream movie, I feel like it wasn't like, you know, the staple gun necessarily, but like piecing him together afterwards and like, you know, like taking all the shit out of him and then like trying to sew the wound shut. It was like, oh my God, they beat the fuck out of this guy.
Well, go ahead.
I liked how it's like it puts it all on display and shows you really what he's going through and putting himself through. But I also, and this is one thing I don't think we touched on too much, but I love you get to really see all the camaraderie he has with all the other wrestlers he works with and how they're like, I'm going to do this move. Is this okay? Is that okay? Are you good with that? And you know, the staple gun. Oh, how bad does it hurt? You know. All that. And I mean, it was nuts just how much you see, but I really appreciated like how it's like a hard cut to like the aftermath. And then they kind of bring it back and show you like, here's this moment that happened. And then this one, and you get to see it all stitched together like that.
Yeah. I was just going to say like, for me, I've got this weird thing where most of the time, like violence in movies doesn't bother me, but I remember as a kid, there was like a show on Fox about plastic surgeries called Nip Tuck. And the like promo image was like a woman's stomach with a scalpel, like going towards her belly button.
Ugh.
And that freaks me out more than like Bone Tomahawk violence ever did. And so, yeah, like watching Mickey Rourke getting like chunks of glass, like pulled out of him with tweezers was like, stop. or like him like pulling barbed wire out of his gut while he's in the ring. Like, that's worse to me than watching a man get split down the middle with an animal jawbone.
I think it's because it's more realistic, you know,
the worst bit of violence for me for the whole movie. And it's also to his character, but it's when he purposely puts his hand in the meat slicer, his thumb or whatever. Because the whole time, I mean, they're alluding to it with just like the way they're like zooming in on it and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, he's either going to accidentally cut his hand or something, you know? And then when he does it, it's like, again, you're just seeing his self-destructive tendencies on full display into this eruption of not just blood and violence, but just anger and frustration of him, like, you know, fuck you to his boss and knocking shit over and yelling at the customers and stuff.
He's having his Citizen Kane moment.
I mean, that was just like, I remember I was just like, I really winced at that. I was like, God damn, dude, like, it doesn't have to be this way, you know.
Did you guys notice the sound effect that plays every time there's about to be intense blood or gore or violence? It's like a high pitched metallic kind of thing, like right before he cuts himself.
For me, it's like the sound when you like kick the bottom of a mic stand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of that, and they kept doing it. Like as soon as that sound started playing when he was like looking at the meat slicer, I was like, ah, Jesus, here we go. And I thought he was going to lose a lot more than just, you know, cutting himself or whatever. But
yeah,
that was a great scene. And I can't tell you guys how much that fucking lady, because I used to work at a grocery store, that lady who was like, oh, I need a little bit more potato salad. Okay, I want a little bit less, a little bit more.
Oh my God.
I'm going to come over the counter and slap her in the face. But he was really good at that job, and I thought it was super fun to watch him interact with all the, you know, he two big breasts. That's what I need, and something with a brain. That was so funny.
Well, quick bit of trivia for that. I was reading. I found out. So I don't know which is which, but I heard a lot of that was improvised with real customers, And I felt like I caught that when he like throws the fucking potato salad away. He's like, go long. And the guy looks like, what the fuck? Like, really kind of annoyed. He's like, I'm just trying to get my potato salad. I thought that was so funny. And he's probably like, oh, they're filming some documentary or something at home. It was really annoying. Like,
yeah. What did he know? He's in my favorite scene in The Wrestler.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, you know, what other burning topics have you guys brought to the table here? We got a few minutes left.
I want to just also just mention a couple things with his boss. That's like he just annoyed me so much how he's acting like he's all like high and mighty over this guy. Like, oh, you know, I only have like shit work for you, and oh, our tights getting too expensive. And then he's like just blatantly watching porn on the work computer, and he's like, why don't you go back out and knock, you know, you remember to knock this time? I'm like, God, I hate this fucking guy. Like, please smash him.
Yeah, that wouldn't have it wouldn't have made for a very realistic movie, but him going apeshit on Todd Barry would have been very very really satisfying on some level. Neil, I heard you sharply inhale. What do you got?
So, just like a fun series of bits of trivia for this movie. So, number one, the studio originally wanted Nicolas Cage to play Randy in this movie.
Nice.
So like there's actually some like photos of him like going to Ring of Honor events. Like you see him in the front row like observing the wrestlers. But Darren Aronofsky really wanted Mickey Rourke for the role, because Mickey Rourke famously was like you know, like a Tom Cruise, Leo DiCaprio like handsome actor man. Mm-hmm. And then took a break from Hollywood to get into boxing and messed up his face, as we see. So like there are parallels there, but he also has like a history of drug problems. So the studio like pulled most of the funding when Aronofsky insisted on Rourke. And so as part of that, Axl Rose loved the idea so much that he gave them the rights to Sweet Child of Mine for the movie for free.
So awesome.
Awesome.
So sick.
The other thing I just want to talk about is like, I don't know why I've never gotten into professional wrestling. I think it's too late for me. But I'm kind of like Gideon was talking about, with like them like pre-gaming the matches, like talking about what they're going to do and like how they're going to do it. Like I should like professional wrestling, because I really like the idea of these guys who get into it to be the bad guy. Like they want to be the heel, you know, like the boos are their applause basically.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, so seeing that like first match against the younger guy with the Mohawk, or again later the like trash man match with the staple gun, like, you know, those guys, I don't think they're ever going to get a redemption arc in their storylines. I'm sorry to say. And they know that. They know that they are like portraying themselves as the bad guys in this weird, like, I've never been able to get into it as much as I, like, on paper, I think professional wrestling was like made for me, but somehow it just doesn't translate. But in the context of this movie, like him planning things out with his heels, it's just very interesting to see these guys, like, you know, they're very nice and polite behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all of a sudden, I'm going to punch two staples into your chest in the ring.
Oof.
But
yeah, I kind of agree with you, Neil. Like that, I definitely had that reaction. Like when I was watching it, I was like, God damn it, should I get into fucking professional wrestling? And then I kind of like, I made a bargain with myself. I was like, you know what? If my kid expresses interest in professional wrestling, I'll get into it with him. Because there's something, I know it's like violent and they're disrespectful to women and, you know, whatever, but like when I see videos of like a dad and a son like front row at WrestleMania or something, and they both get to like high five John Cena, and then he like puts somebody through the floor, I'm like, you know what, that's good shit, that's good male bonding time. You go, you scream a little bit, you watch some violence, you maybe see a little, you know, a little too much of some hot lady, that's okay, you know. There's something very positive about it, and I don't know, but I certainly like feel you that it feels like very dense and hard to get into while it's in motion. Like, what are you gonna do? Go back and watch every episode of WWE since that shit came on in like the late 70s or whatever? Like, nah, I'm not gonna do that. So it does seem kind of hard to get into. Neil, sure, or Gideon, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel similarly with you guys of like, I feel like I would really appreciate and enjoy some wrestling, professional wrestling, and like even with like luchadors and stuff, you know, I mean, this is kind of a funny comparison, but like I really, really like Nacho Libre. And mm-hmm. I think just the idea of luchadors is really cool too, how there's like almost like a different angle with their mythos and how their traditions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of like, I'm at capacity for hobbies and things. but then it's like, maybe there's a really, or I'm sure there's a great like YouTube channel that I could just binge, like almost like highlight reels or just like, oh, this year in wrestling, here's like, what do you need to know or whatever. And it's like, you know, I'm not like really big into sports in general, but I do love the sportsmanship and showmanship and the performance element and stuff like that. And I even kind of get that from other sports movies I've seen. I haven't seen like a whole lot, but I always really appreciate that. And just, you know, even just like little things in this movie where he's like, you know, he's like, he keeps hitting his elbows and like the way he's wrapping his arms and stuff. And just like, even the like want to be like the masculine urge to be big and strong. And mm-hmm. for some people, like by any means necessary, like with the steroids and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, yeah, this movie, it's probably my surprise of the year. Like, I really, really was moved by this movie. I really appreciate it. I'm definitely going to get it in the collection at some point. And I'm excited to check it out, you know, in future years, and maybe check out like commentary and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I totally get where you guys are coming from for wanting to get more into it. And it's like, I don't see why I wouldn't like it. You know, I'm really into comics right now, and there's like some parallels with just like the different characters and stuff. Yeah.
Japan also has a major pro wrestling scene. I mean, I think of yeah, the US obviously, and then Mexico has like the luchador tradition, but Japan also has a huge pro wrestling scene that's like really crazy.
Interesting. I never knew that.
Mm. All right. Do you guys want to wrap up and give stars? You're kind of on a roll. Why don't you give us your star rating?
Yeah. I mean, on Letterboxd, I gave it like a 4.5. I feel like I'll just give it a 5. Like, I really loved it. It really was a touching movie. I loved all the performances. I love seeing this like down to earth, real gritty story in like a dilapidated America. And yeah, I just didn't really want it to end. And like the needle drop, it's like the needle drop combined with the speech he gives to Marissa Tomei and the speech he gives to the crowd. It was like a 1-2-3 punch knockout. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So I just like really, really appreciate it. And another thing I just kind of appreciate about the podcast is like, I literally had never heard of this movie, and I don't know if or when I would have ever gotten to it. So I'm just happy I got to check it out. And yeah, I watched it on, I rented it from Apple TV or whatever. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, one for the guys, but I feel like almost anybody could appreciate the story too. And this isn't based on a true story or anything, right? Like, he's fictional, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but Randy is fictional.
But I think it's definitely drawn from a ton of like real
right.
people.
Didn't feel like it. Didn't feel like he was.
Yeah, fictional. Exactly. It felt real. Felt very real.
Felt like a documentary the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's all I got for now.
All right. What about you, Neil?
I'm gonna give it a 5.2. I just think this is like really well put together. You know, I think it's very efficient with its time. Like, you guys kept saying that you didn't want it to end. You know, it's not an overly long movie. I think it's just under 150 or hour 50. But you know, the fact that you guys who complain when a movie's too long were like, I wanted it to go longer. I think that says a whole lot. And you know, it's very focused on Mickey Rourke and with Marissa Tomei as like a strong secondary character, but it's again just mostly Mickey Rourke just carrying this thing on his shoulders, and he does a fantastic job.
Yeah, can we talk about Marissa Tomei real quick? She was so good in this movie, and she has I felt like she had such a warmness to her that was so, I mean, obviously she's beautiful, but she had such a, like, you totally understand why Randy is like falling in love for this like stripper that is like has a heart of gold to steal a phrase. But I feel like we didn't talk about her a lot, and obviously like Mickey is the main draw here, but Marissa Tomei is so good in this movie and really makes you like that scene where they're in the bar and they're like drinking, talking about 80s music. It's just wonderful stuff. So
this movie felt like a meditation on that scene from The Incredibles where he's like thinking about the glory days, but like if it all went wrong,
dude, like you know, that's my favorite scene from The Incredibles.
It's excellent. Yeah.
That's just good. You know what? I'm also going to give it a 5. Is this our first triple five of the year?
I think it might be our first triple five ever.
I think so.
Ever?
Or first perfect score ever. I think we might have a couple where 3 people gave it a 5 and 1 person gave it a 4 kind of thing, but
okay. I think our first perfect score. Not to be a dickhead, I think if I was allowed to give it a 4.5, I would, but I don't have it in me to give it a 4, so I have to give this movie a 5. I was just like so moved by it. So I think if a movie gets a triple 5, we need to make Alex Brinson watch it. I think that should be the rule.
I agree.
So guys, next week we are going to do The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing from the 82 with Jesse's dad, who's really excited to come on. I'll talk to Jesse about getting his dad set up on Discord and making sure the technical part of it's all worked out. Just watch The Thing and be back here next week, and everything should be hunky dory.
Sounds good. I will post that audio in the chat for you guys.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, see you guys.
Bye, everyone. Bye.